Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Grave, Susan Wright, and Matt Spaeth, revealing the truth about the food we eat. Hello?
And welcome to FIN's 50th show. I'm Matt Spaeth, and I'm here today with my two co-hosts, Susan Wright. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you.
And Carol Grave.
Hi, Matt. Well, nothing like starting our 50th show with a few glitches.
You know what? They happen. And there's Mercury retrograde. So we're celebrating our 50th show today and remembering all the amazing guests we've had in the past year, including Sally Fallon, Jeffrey Smith, F. William Engdahl, Charlotte Gershon, T. Colin Campbell, the author of The China Study, and many documentary filmmakers, including...
Well, we've had...
Yeah.
And George Langworthy.
Mary Hannon and George Langworthy of the Vanishing Bees.
Barbara Kowalczyk of Food Inc. and Kristen Canty of Farmageddon.
Yeah, and can't forget Theodore Griffin and Michael Murphy of What in the World Are They Spraying, just to name a few.
Yes,
Carol,
we,
are you having some technical difficulties?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, you know, I don't know what just happened, but we've had many experts that have taught us how to grow food on this show, how to create a plan when technology fails. We've spent the last year having guests that have shared their knowledge and expertise about the food we eat, the water we drink, and even the air we breathe. And you can listen to all of our archived shows on our website, which is foodintegritynow.org, or you can also find us on Facebook. And on Facebook, we're just called Food Integrity Now. So we got off to a little rough start, but we're here, and we're very excited about our show today. Our guest today really cares about the water planet, and we're happy to welcome back to the show Jean-Michel Cousteau. Mr. Cousteau is an explorer, he's an environmentalist, an educator, and film producer, and so much more. And for more than four decades, Jean-Michel has dedicated himself and his vast experience to communicate to people of all nations and generations his love and concern for our water planet. Welcome, Jean-Michel.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be back on your show, and happy 50 years, and forget about the glitches. It's a detail.
It's a detail. You're right. And we're excited to have you here. And we really want to learn more about what are the state of our oceans right now. So I know that's a broad question, but I'm sure you're the one to answer it.
Well, I'm not sure I can answer all the potential questions, but I certainly want to make it very, very clear that we, the 7 billion people, all the plants and animals that live on our planet, and particularly on 30% of the surface of the planet Earth, are completely dependent on the quality of the ocean for the quality of their lives. Whether they live along the coastline or way inland or on top of a mountain, we are completely dependent on the water system, whether it is fresh water or salt water, and it's that simple. That snow on top of the mountain will melt, will go in streams, rivers, into the ocean with everything we put into it, and the ocean ultimately will evaporate, create the clouds and the weather we know, and go right back to the top of that mountain to put some snow there. The ocean cleans the mess that we are making in the ocean by evaporating perfectly pure, clean water. So we have a problem. And the problem is that we need to stop using the ocean as a garbage can, and more than that, because we are visual creatures and we don't relate to things we don't see, but heavy metals and thousands of chemicals that are released into the ocean, which are affecting everything, the oceans, the plants, the animals, and ultimately are concentrating within the food chain and go all the way up to those big fish, those whales, those dolphins, and some of what we capture faster than nature can produce comes right into our plate with everything we put into the ocean, and it is already today in a very major way. So, before we didn't know. Now we know. And that's the good news. So we know what to do. And we, the 7 billion people on the planet, have to take responsibility and stop using the ocean as a sewer and a garbage can. And we can do it. And we will.
I couldn't agree more. And I wondered what your thoughts are about what's happening in the Gulf. I know that, you know, we had you on 7 or 8 months ago, and we talked about the Gulf. So what's happening down there as far as your take on it?
Well, here we go again. It's a very, very unpleasant situation. And I'll start by saying that 22 years ago, I was up at the Prince William Sound with the Exxon Valdez, which is 150th, the oil that was spilled into the Gulf. Today, 22 years later, what has happened up there in Alaska is not over yet. There are species that have not recovered. There is a family of orcas or killer whales that will disappear because they cannot feed themselves or reproduce. And there are fishing industry people and the local Indian people who have been affected in a way and haven't yet recovered. So now we switch to the Gulf. And let me tell you that in between there was the Prestige in Spain, and I was there a few weeks ago, and the people are still suffering from the Prestige that sunk and the oil that went onto the coastline of Spain and Portugal. So now we're in the Gulf of Mexico. We were there, as you may know, we were amongst the first people, if not the first people underwater, to see and observe and film and be witnesses of what the consequences were. And then it took months for the spill to be stopped. And the authorities stood up and said, it's over, it's finished, two-thirds of the oil is gone. And the media packed up, they left, and tens of thousands of people, now I understand 100,000 people who have been affected by the oil spill, were left behind. And many, many species which are in the ocean, in the Gulf, have been affected. And we will take probably 20 years before we know really how much the Gulf has been affected. The fact that we were told that the oil is gone, my question was immediately, gone where? Well,
right.
It's there. Most of it is there. And we are now finding out that the mother dolphins who were pregnant at the time and gave birth in the oil and the dispersant and breastfed their babies in the oil and the dispersant? Well, we're starting to find them dead on the coastline. And same thing happened with the turtles. We don't know about the big whales because they're not there. Or maybe some people know things we don't know for sure. And that's what we see. Remember, we are visual creatures. We relate to what we see. What's
right.
happening under the surface? What's happening with the plankton? What's happening with the fish species? Are they able to reproduce? Are they going to give birth to the same amount of fish? Are those fish going to be healthy? Are they going to be able to recover and help those people who have lost their job, lost their boats, or are thriving to make a living? And what's going on with our friend who was a fisherman who lost his boat and his brother is working for the oil company? How are they doing psychologically? What's going on in that family? See, we have so many things we need to pay attention to and focus upon in order to make sure that we don't make the same mistakes again and again and again. And in the case of this spill, they took shortcuts. We all know that. So the spill took place. And when it took place, we were not prepared to face up to it. They tried 1, 2, 3, 4, and only the fifth times were they able to shut it down. You know, enough is enough. We as a species have the capacity to stop that. And the billions of dollars that the oil company is paying or has paid already could have been invested by that same company into renewable energy and continue to be in business and satisfy the shareholders who are now mad because the money that they were going to collect has been used to partially repair the damage done to the Gulf and particularly to the people. So, you know, it's a wake-up call. And
yeah.
I really believe we need to listen and we need to change. And we are there not to point fingers. We are there to help our decision makers, politics, or industry to make better decisions. And we can do it. And I really believe with the help of your program, with the help of young people who are trying to make a difference, we will be able to not allow that to happen again and again. You know, we make mistakes. Humans make mistakes. But knowing that, we should be prepared for it and have solutions to face up to our mistakes. That was not the case.
You know, my concern is that mainstream media has pretty much stopped talking about the Gulf. And so people just, you know, are focusing on other things. So I'm wondering, you know, I hear what you're saying about, yes, we can learn a lesson from this. But will there be enough interest focused on this area that that we really can make a difference and do something different?
Well, you know, I'm not interested in failures. I'm interested in solutions.
Right.
And we have to do everything we can at Ocean Future Society and other organizations to do everything we know and help those who can make a difference. Whether it's sitting down with the responsible people in the oil industry, and it's not just one, it's several of them, sitting down with governments and the people responsible who can make a difference. We are not there to point fingers. We are there to find solutions. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing. In 2006, we were able to sit down with the President of the United States, and the President, and I have to give credit to his wife as well, were very concerned about what we had found in the middle of the Pacific. And on the 15th of June that year, the President declared the Northwestern Hawaiian Island a national marine monument. I mean, we didn't accuse him. We didn't point fingers. We just share the information and ideas for potential solutions. We can do that, whether it's the local parishes, presidents who are very concerned, whether it is the governor, whether it is with the president of the United States, whether it is with the oil companies. We need to help them, and we can.
Well, I love your optimistic attitude, and you know, I think it's important for all of us to have that similar attitude, because if we did have a defeatist attitude, nothing would ever get done.
Right. So we can't turn the page. We just need to do what needs to be done and
right.
try again. And, you know, when you're a little bit discouraged, or you feel that, oh, my God, things are not going the way I'd like to, look in the eyes of a five-year-old. Are you going to give up? Are you going to say, well, not my problem, your problem, little twit? You know, so that's how I recharge my batteries. When I'm a little discouraged, or, you know, my morale is a little bit down, I go and look at kids. And that recharges my batteries, and I will, until my last breath, will do everything
right.
I can to help.
Wonderful. Well, we are going to take a break to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Jean-Michel Cousteau. This is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240.
And I thank you.
Linda Masterson, Soul Purpose Astrologer, works with astrological tools and with guides in the non-physical to assist ones in knowing their soul purpose. Important in this process is identification of significant blockages. In each session, tools are provided for working with self to clear resistance and free talents, skills, and abilities to fuller expression. The goal is to take responsibility for and to accelerate the healing process. Phone sessions are offered by Linda. Please visit Linda at lindamasterson.com or call 808-651-0307. Again, that's 808-651-0307. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now's 50th show, and we're celebrating our 50th show with a very special guest, Jean-Michel Cousteau, who's sharing with us his take on the state of our oceans. Jean-Michel, I have a question. Fukushima was a much greater disaster than first reported. How do you feel that disaster is impacting our oceans?
Well, I don't think we are in a position today to know exactly the impact, but we're starting to understand that not only the debris, all the things that have been washed away by the tsunami particularly, the radioactivity is really what concerns me the most, because in as much as the quantity is not gigantic, what goes into the ocean and is absorbed by plants or vegetation, if you want, is sitting there, and you know what? fish go and chew on it. Herbivores, or fish or other herbivores, they chew on it, and then they concentrate that in their system, and those fish, let's say, they swim away, and then they get eaten by bigger fish and bigger fish and bigger fish. So it goes up the food chain, and there's a higher and higher and a higher concentration of those potentially very, very dangerous products. So radioactivity, to me, is something that we really need to focus upon. And, of course, you know, not knowing where things come from on a regular basis and not necessarily believing what I hear or what I read in the news, I'm not touching it anymore. Well, that's tough because it's affecting the whole industry, the fishing industry and the economy of Japan and on and on and on. So, yeah, there are problems which have not yet been solved. In addition to that, I don't know if it's going to happen soon or not, but in Oregon or maybe Northern California, we're going to start to find pieces of houses or whatnot, and then you go in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, which is 1,200 miles of reefs and islands, and we're going to find a lot of that stuff out there. How much is it going to affect the marine life? I don't really know. How much is it going to affect shipping or vessels, which will run into half a house or whatever is floating out there, or I don't know, a bus or whatever. I don't think we have any idea yet of the consequences of that catastrophe. And that's why, living in California, I'm very concerned about our nuclear plants because they're getting to be very old. We know that they cannot stand the kind of earthquakes that have taken place in Japan, because they were not built for that kind of earthquake, and they're old. So I'm asking questions to our representative. What are we doing? Are we making sure that the prevention system is being put in place? Or do we need to shut them down? All of those questions are still very much alive, and I'm mentioning California or Southern California, but what about other parts of the world? California is on the same kind of potential problems from earthquakes than Japan has been. So, you know, we need to address these issues. We can't turn the page and say, forget it, next. It's very much alive. And perhaps we've learned something from this tragedy in Japan. We have very good friends, Japanese friends, whose lives have been completely affected. And in the meantime, you know, the biggest industry of shark fin soup has been destroyed, and everybody's saying, yay! Well, I'm saying that that's a temporary thing. In the same time, the tsunami has destroyed the whaling factory, which packaged the whale meat, and everybody's saying, wow! Well, I'm saying that's not going to stop them from doing it. And education is probably the best way to educate the young people so they understand that it's not in their best interests. And then we're finding out things which, from a cultural point of view, are fascinating, because the tsunami unearthed all the whale bones that had been buried. And for them, symbolically, it was for the people who are not in favor of whaling, symbolically, it meant that the whales went back to the ocean. So that was a very emotional thing, you know. And so there are a lot that we can learn from our mistakes, and sometimes it may help.
You mentioned that you have you personally met with government officials and other people in authority about the problems with the nuclear plants in California?
No, I have not, and it is part of my plan to meet with our governor, whom I happen to know. I've known him even before he was the governor the first time, but I have not been able to meet with him yet. I'm sure that will happen, and it is one of the issues I want to address.
Yeah, it seems like a really important issue, and you know, if we don't learn from this latest disaster, I mean, what's it going to take for us?
Well, let me tell you other things. You know, people are getting sick and tired of bad news. What about good news? And I'm working on a project right now in California, which can be used in many other places, and that is the use of fish bones. Fish bones are now being used in very specific places, and in western Oakland, near San Francisco, where you have a community of 150 people or 150 families living there, their soil, because it used to be an industrial place before people moved there, is loaded with lead. Lead.
Yeah.
Lead is horrible, particularly on children. It affects their brain, their nervous system. And the good news is that thanks to experiments that were made, I believe, in the military, the Environmental Protection Agency has now awarded a local company and provided local people with jobs to inject the whale or the fish bones, which is kind of a powder, into the ground, and that neutralize the presence or neutralize the lead and will not affect people anymore. This is good news, and
that's exciting.
Communities,
yeah,
in the parts of the country.
Well, how was that discovered? Do you have any information about that? I mean, how did they come up with that?
Well, we do. Obviously, it's a chemical reaction, but it's a scientist, a lady who has been working on this for many, many years. I believe she worked also with the military, who neutralized lead in some of the military places in this country, and found out that it works very well. And now it's for the first time, and I'm trying to do or raise funds to do a one-hour special on this issue to apply it and show that it's working very well there in California. And then I want to make sure that many other places in the country or abroad where we can apply that technology will allow to help people not get sick.
That's wonderful.
Great. I just found an article about it. Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah, that's great. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a big article in the New York Times for once, good news, and they were talking about it.
Well, cool. What are there other is there other research being done on in similar fields in the ocean to help us clean up the earth?
Well, I'm sure they are, and let me mention another very fascinating story, which is a reality. There's a company again which started in California, but now they have a plant in on the East Coast. In Pennsylvania, to be specific, and they have spent years and years and years studying and identifying the fastest growing algae from the ocean, which algae grows exponentially and thus very quickly, 1 becomes 2, 4, 8, 16, and on and on. And they are able now with this algae to create many things. I have tested the cooking oil that they're making, and I'm still alive. I've eaten some of the food that they've produced, including, watch out, cookies, really, and I'm still alive. And then they went to manufacture, my memory tells me, 23,000 gallons of energy oil, which have been put into a United States Navy ship, which has been propelled by an algae. And if it hasn't happened, it will. They're going to fly a United States airplane, Air Force plane, with that one cell algae. And the company is called Solarzyme, and it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And this is what the ocean can help us with.
Wow,
that's
that
fantastic.
Is
I love hearing about stuff like that.
Yeah, me too. Good news.
Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break here for another message from our sponsors, and we'll be right back in a couple of minutes. We'll see you on the other side.
Thank you.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard Water. Willard Water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly 24 trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter capful of Willard Water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard Water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard Water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Experiencing anxiety, anger, depression, or low self-esteem? Do you beat yourself up or sabotage what you truly want to achieve? Hi, this is Jeannie Smith, and at Open Heart Healing, I combine counseling, Gestalt therapy, and Tai Chi energy work to assist those who truly desire to bring quality and joy back into their lives. My office is located on South Perry Street here in Castle Rock. Call me for a free consultation at 303-660-6373. Again, that's 303-660-6373, or visit me at openhearthealing.com.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais, and I'm here with Susan Wright and Matt Spaeth, and we're celebrating our 50th show with our special guest, Jean-Michel Cousteau. Jean-Michel, you were talking about a couple of different projects and things that are happening that are really positive with our environment, and do you have any more projects you're working on, or maybe you could give our listeners a way that they could get involved in helping to clean up our oceans?
Well, cleaning up the ocean is a mission which obviously is very important, and there are people cleaning up the ocean. For example, they are during the summer time, particularly there are young students who have time, you know, out of college or high school, who volunteer to go and clean up the ocean. They work with NOAA. And they're being sent to Midway, where there they live for that I've experienced when I was there. They live on a ship, and every day they go and pick up stuff, mostly fishing nets, because fishing nets, there are thousands of tons of fishing nets that are abandoned, lost, drifting in the middle of the ocean, that are ongoing killing machines. And as they kill, they can kill anything. They can kill a fish, and then the bird that dives to try to catch the fish. And then you have endangered species like the monk seals, which are getting caught. And then you have the green sea turtles, endangered species that are getting caught. And then ultimately those reefs end up on, those fishing nets end up on the reef. And you have a storm, and the storm is pushing the net, and it literally destroys the coral, and they end up on beaches or whatnot. There are people who go out there and pick up all that stuff the best they can and put them on land, and then they put them on barges, and the barges are taken to Honolulu, and in Honolulu they burn them and make electricity out of it. That's one thing people do and can do. We also have people going on beaches and picking up old stuff along the coastline. The most important thing, which we need to really put in our brain, is we need to stop it at the source. We need to stop throwing a cigarette lighter over our shoulder, thinking out of sight, out of mind, because it will be washed down with the next rain into a stream and ultimately into the ocean. And that particular cigarette lighter or a toothbrush or mascara or a bottle top or, you know, I can go on and on and on, will be picked up by birds, particularly when the flying fish lay their eggs on anything that floats, which is what they've done long before we had any plastic out there. And those fish eggs, flying fish eggs, are extremely good as nutrients for the chicks, for the baby birds that are sitting in the nests on those islands waiting for the food for mom and or dad. And they're taking turns with the albatross particularly, who have traveled thousands of miles to go there on those islands where every other year they come to nest, same nest, same couple. They are couple for life. Maybe that works because they only meet every 2 years. And they then go and get these fish eggs, but they pick up these things that float and regurgitate that in their chicks. When we were there and we filmed it over and over, we saw a lot of baby birds who died and or are dying, and ultimately we find between 8 and 12 pieces of foreign objects in their stomach. Nobody wins. So we, wherever we are, in Topeka, Kansas, or on top of a mountain, we should stop throwing things in the environment. We should make sure, and it's every one of us can do it. I do it all the time. Today, I was, you know, on the sidewalk, and I picked a plastic spoon because I know it's going to go into the ocean. And all of us can make a difference. And that's one little way of doing it. And I was, you know, I want to give you an example. I was walking on the sidewalk about 3 or 4 months ago, and there was a mother and a kid following a gentleman who threw his cigarette pack on the ground because there's no more cigarettes. And the kid said, "Sir, sir, you dropped something." And, you know, the guy was so embarrassed that he went and picked up his cigarette pack. I mean, there are many ways we can make a difference. And that's only one way. Now I can tell you stories about how you can save money. Turn off your lights. Make sure you have a hybrid car if you can afford changing your car. And every time the engine stops, you can smile. And at the same time, at the end of the month, you save money. And, by the way, you're helping the environment. You're not emitting as much CO2. The climate change may slow down fast enough so your grandchildren will have the same privilege that I have had. And on and on and on. We, you know, there's no excuse. Everybody, rich or poor, can make a difference.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Exactly. It just takes awareness. And sometimes I think one of the things that is so discouraging to people when they hear things like this is that they don't know what they can do as one person. And you mentioned a lot of those chemicals that get washed into the ocean and the heavy metals. And, you know, we contribute to that every day just by living in society. What other things, as far as chemicals, what are some of the big contributors to death in the ocean as far as chemicals, besides petroleum and some of these other major things?
Well, they're big corporations, and we work with some of them. We sit down with them and try to help them change. And they want to change. By the same token, they were not created for that. So they were created to produce a product which is supposedly going to help. What they can help with is to put a little fraction of their profit into education, into making sure that the people who consume those products know what to do with them. And that make a big difference. We are, you know, in California, again, and it's affecting many parts of the country, when we found out that many species of marine creatures, and particularly orcas, killer whales, which are the dominant creature in the ocean, were affected by some of those chemicals. So we were encouraged, because the state of California agreed to have a, how can I call it, a pilot project. And we volunteered at Ocean Future Society with our team to be tested for, if I'm not mistaken, 32 chemicals and 2 metals. And we asked the government who was sponsoring that to also have some of the government people agree or volunteer to do the same tests, so there would be no disagreement or argument about the findings. And we got tested. I was one of them. And we were amazed to see that, for example, and I'm not going to bore you with all those chemicals, but the PBDEs, which are flame retardant or fire, were created for a very good reason. Very good reason. And that was originally to give somebody who is smoking and falling asleep in his couch or in his bed a chance to get away. And my memory tells me it gives you another 12 seconds before it catches on fire. Well, that may, we felt, be very helpful and save people. But we're finding out that it has other consequences. And those fire retardants, or PBDEs, are making their way into the ocean, either as powders, which ultimately end up in streams, or in whatever we have at our home, whether it is our carpet, or sofa, or mattress, or our pillow, or some of the clothes we have, or our children's pajamas, or the kids' toys. They are all together with your computer, your cell phone, your television monitor, loaded with that stuff. And we're finding out that, amongst other things, that thanks to science and research, that it is affecting animals which have been tested, particularly cats. What do cats do? They're on the ground. They're on the sofa. They, you know, roll around just like our little kids. So when we found out what he did to animals, we said, well, what about kids? And now we're finding out that when it comes to kids, it can affect their attention span, their thyroid, eventually increase the rate of cancer. In adults, we're finding out that the sperm counts is going down. For a young lady who wants to be a mother, it takes a lot more time for that to happen. I mean, we now know, we didn't know, thanks to that program, which was authorized by the state of California and now can be used all over the country, we can realize that these bioretardants or PBDEs, which are illegal in Western Europe for a good reason, can be eliminated, and we don't want to put the pharmaceutical or, I'm sorry, the chemical industry out of business. That's not the point. The point is that there was a good reason to create that, but we didn't know the other consequences. Now we do, so we need to change. And we need the chemical industry to come up with something that is not harmful. They can do it, and ultimately they will. But we need to help them. We need to talk to them. We need to work with the scientists who have found all of this, and we as the liaison communicators, we can sit down with those decision makers, both industries and governments, and try to make them change. And that's what we're doing at Ocean Futures.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, we are going to take one more break, and we will be right back with Jean-Michel Cousteau.
Thank you.
Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the dolphins in the wild? This is Carol Gravet with Wild Dolphin Swim Adventures, and I just teamed up with Sharon Farrell of RockyMountainSacredJourneys.com. We're here to invite you on an amazing journey of self-discovery, fun, and adventure. Your adventure will include swimming with the wild dolphins, past life regression or Tai Yi energy treatment, gourmet organic meals, and much, much more. To find out about our upcoming trip in October, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or call us at 415-302-7100. Again, that's 415-302-7100. Hope you can join us. Mahalo.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. This is our final segment with Jean-Michel Cousteau on our 50th show. You can find all of our archive shows, all 50 of them, including this show, will be archived on foodintegritynow.org. And you can also find us on Facebook at Food Integrity Now. Jean-Michel, I have a question about the Pacific Trash Vortex. What's your take on that? Can anything be done to clean that up?
Well, yes, of course. But the best thing as we clean it up is to stop dumping in the ocean, because otherwise it will be there forever.
Yeah.
And today I can tell you that on some of those beaches where we were, at maybe a foot below the surface of the sand, there were objects which have not been manufactured since the 60s. Mm-hmm. So the ocean has the power of carrying all that stuff for a very, very long time. And you're talking about an area which is as big or bigger than the state of Texas. So we need to stop using the ocean as a garbage can and at the same time did the best possible cleanup out there, just like those people who go and pick up the abandoned fishing net. There are people who are now studying the possibility of dropping a GPS or a tag, if you want, on anything that floats, and then have ships that would come and pick them up. So there are a lot of people trying to come up with answers. Of course, the media doesn't care because it's not bad news. Media love bad news. But this is good news, and we're making progress there. But it really starts with every one of us at home, at work, in our neighborhood, with our communication, with anyone. And we can make a big difference. And, you know, our young people are doing a much better job than we do. So we're heading in the right direction, but we need to help them.
Yeah, you're right, we do. And isn't that true that it starts with individuals always? Any kind of big changes that have been affected starts with, you know, one or two individuals, and then it expands and things get done.
Well, look at what's happening with leaders, young people who want to make a difference. And they do. We need more of those, and stop having this ongoing conversation, particularly in government, which is such a waste. We know, you know, people have to realize the privilege that we have. They forget about that. They take it for granted. To be in a free country where you can express yourself, and as long as you don't break the law, you can say anything you want. And you can, then you can position people who can make a difference, but that doesn't mean that once you've elected them, whoever it is, you can walk away and say, forget about it, it's his problem or her problem. No, it's just the beginning. And that's what's exciting in a free world, is that you can always communicate with the people you put in place, or even if you haven't. These people are there to listen. That's their job, to listen to us, every one of us. And ultimately, they do the right thing. And I really believe that. Otherwise, if you don't believe that, you should move. You should go to, I don't know, go to, I'm not going to tell you where to go.
So what's happening with Ocean Futures? You want to give your website and tell us about any new projects you're working on?
Well, Ocean Futures Society .org. Ocean Futures Society.
Just Ocean Futures.
Hmm?
Ocean Futures, no society.
Well, that's right. The website itself is oceanfutures.org. Ocean Futures' mission is very simple. Protect the ocean, and you protect yourself. You can be a member. It's completely free. I wanted that. And I'm sometimes fighting some of my colleagues because they like us to charge our members. But I didn't want children who play or juggle with computers to ask money to their parents to be a member. So as a result, and it's a consequence, our membership is completely private. We're not legally allowed to give it away, exchange it, or sell it. And that's why a lot of our members are very happy, because they're not, you know, drowning into other people's information. What we do is essentially three things. We communicate, and we do it, one, with our educational program called Ambassador of the Environment, which is in different parts of the world. And on our website, you can see that. We have another education program, which is called Sustainable Reef. We are working now on sustainable rainforests. Another part of our activity is to produce television programs, and more, we're getting involved in 3D. We're getting involved in IMAX. So it's not just television, it's internet, it's any possible way. And we're heading toward 3D, because the entire world very soon will be in 3D. Your television monitor, your cell phone, your computer, your theater, local theater, and your IMAX, everything is going to be in 3D. And that's something we're doing. And then finally, the third thing is, I call it diplomacy. And diplomacy means that some of us, and me in particular, we go and sit down with decision makers. We're trying to help them make better decisions. And that takes a lot of time. But it's a privilege. I inherited that from my father. We have a beautiful team who are doing exactly the same thing. I have two children, Fabien and Céline, who are in their 40s and late 30s. And my nephew and my niece, they are a whole bunch of other young custos who are wet, and they all want to continue and honor the philosophy and the spirit of Jacques-Yves Cousteau. So things are, I think, heading in the right direction, but the pressure is mounting. Let's not forget that we add 100 million people to the planet every year, and so it's putting a lot of pressure on our life support system, and particularly the ocean.
Yeah. Well said.
Become
well,
a member. Are you a member?
I am a member.
Ah, good. Bravo. Yeah. Then I keep talking to you.
Good. Well, we really want to thank you for being on our 50th show. I can't think of a better guest. When we were discussing doing our 50th show, your name came up. And, you know, once again, you just have so much information to share with us. And I think I really enjoy personally your passion for the earth and your passion for, you know, our water planet. And so thank you very much for being, I would recommend
next time you need to find somebody, Dr. Sylvia Earle is as passionate as I am.
Dr. Sylvia Earle. Okay. We will.
Right. We'll put her on our list.
We'll put her on our list. And so thank you again. And you are listening to Food Integrity Now. Again, this was our 50th show. And on our website, we have so much information to share with people. You know, anything and everything you'd want to know about the food we eat, the air we breathe, water issues, sustainability issues, you will be able to find some sort of topic under any of our archived shows that would meet your needs of anything you wanted to learn. And we will continue to have shows, I think, that you know, affect what we eat and who we are as a species. Do you have anything else to add, Matt or Susan?
No, I just want to thank Mr. Cousteau again, and I really appreciate his positive outlook, and that's really refreshing and great to hear.
Remember, my father used to say, people protect what they love.
Right.
That's true.
Well said.
We can surely see that you have such a deep love for this earth and its oceans, and we really thank you and applaud you for the work that you do.
Thank you very much. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. So we will be back next week on Food Integrity Now with our 51st show, and we plan to go on and on and on. So thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you next week.